the story of Shoreham's bungalow town and its theatrical colony. It's presented by Neb Walters.
What is now Shoreham-by-Sea was, until 1912, New Shoreham, Old Shoreham, Kingston Goosey, and Bungalow Town. Bungalow Town on the beach was unique, a picturesque colony of wooden houses and bungalows, unjustly called Shanty Town by some New Shoreham people, though most of the dwellings were far superior to many of those over the river. And there was a big theatrical colony. Had an appeal sadly lacking today. It was rather like Barry's Enchanted Isle, and cast a spell over those who lived there. And yet, it existed for only about 40 years. The story of Bungalow Town is told by some of those who came under its spell. Packy Loftus Gray, Fred Button, Ivor Jim Walters, and first, Reg Leggett. So, when did it all start?
Well, that's going back a long way. It became Bungalow Town long before I was born, I think. And as far as I know, just about the turn of the century, or possibly before, one or two people had built these small bungalows over there as just holiday places for the summer and weekend places. But I do know that in the very early days on the beach, In the days of the beginning of the residential development, there were a row of Coast Guard houses over there. They were called Coast Guard cottages. They were quite substantial, and they were there probably before anything else, when it was just a shingle spit stretching from Lancing in the west right up to Hull in the east.
Mrs. Gray, of course, we know you as Patty Loftus, which is a famous name in the theatre, and I think it was it through your aunt that you came to Shoreham to Bungalow Town originally?
Oh, yes. Yes, she had the bungalow Cecilia, which was down by the fort.
And this was named after your cousin Cecilia Loftus?
Her daughter, Marley's daughter, Auntie yes. Marley's daughter, yes.
At the time that your aunt had this bungalow, first of all, were there many bungalows on the beach?
There were only five. There were only five bungalows. I remember one was called Lullaby. Then there was another one owned by some French people. Then there was Cecilia. Then another one. And then one called Kingsville. There were not any more up until you got to Lancing.
What about your groceries and things? How did you get those up there?
Well, there was no road, as you know, and no conveyance of any kind. And this Mr. Steady, who was a German, he had chickens, and if you wanted a chicken, he'd kill a chicken for you, and of course there were the eggs. And then he kept a sack of flour and a sack of potatoes and any little odd things that he thought that the five bungalows might need.
Then, of course, afterwards there was the bungalow store, didn't they?
Yes, but of course that was years later, after there was a road built. But I remember my cousin and I used to go across the ferry, where the bridge is, the railway bridge.
Railway wharf.
Railway wharf. And then we used to walk from there into Shoreham Village.
Patty Loftus, Mrs. Gray, she spoke after Reg Leggett. That ferry was near Silverthorne. There was another, as Jim Walters explains.
Just near where the footbridge, there used to be a ferry which went across to the opposite side.
It was pretty perilous crossing, especially at night, and especially in the winter when the gales were on, when the tide was low, you found yourself very often getting into deep mud if you strayed from the path and sinking up above your ankles in it.
Many people, I think, probably carried hurricane lamps.
They needed them, believe me.
I remember there was one of the ferrymen was Page. His name was Fairy Page. I'm sure there's still some of his relatives living in the area now. But there'd be quite a number of these ferrymen, because it was the only way of getting from the beach to the town, except by walking right round over Norfolk Bridge, which is a suspension bridge. And they had, on one of the columns, they had a lion, and the other, the unicorn. It was a very handsome bridge and beautifully kept. with a toll house at either end.
Jim Walters and Reg Leggett. What happened when the old bridge came down? Fred Batten.
If we were delivering milk with the horse and horse floats, we had to drive over the level crossing at Old Shoreham, round by the Sussex Pad, and then across New Salt's Farm to get to the beach. And that prompted us to make use of a very old ford, it must have been, over the river, slightly south of where the footbridge was eventually built.
That must have been the one called Dolphin Hard, was it?
Yes, I think it probably was, yes.
I've got an idea that I've seen photographs of the old railway carriages being towed across there by a team of horses.
Yes, that is so.
That's when they were used to build the bungalows. This peculiar construction, how was it arranged?
They lined up two railway carriages, and the space between the two railway carriages formed the main lounge. And the compartments in the carriages were used as bedrooms.
And of course they all had such exotic names, hadn't they, these
wonderful names, such as Sanssouci, Osakosi.
Every bungalow has a name, and some of the most attractive names that one could ever imagine. In fact, it was quite a delightful community over there at that time, where no street numbers, no properly made up roads or anything else.
There's some of the names you mentioned just now, Minnehaha. That was surely your family bungalow.
Yes, it was one of the bungalows that belonged to my family in those early days. Around about 1910, my father had been a singer in his day, and a concert platform singer. And I think one of the things that that he'd enjoyed a lot was Hiawatha. And strangely, the first bungalow father had built at that time, he named Minnehaha, which means laughing water. And after that, he had built two more bungalows. They were a pair, really. And one he named Hiawatha West. The other he named Hiawatha East. And after that, he had two more built. No, he had, let me, one, two, three more built. One he named Nokomis. Another Ponymar, and the third, no, I don't think that comes from Hiawatha at all, the play. It was called Pandora, but I think that's another name altogether.
Fred Batten and his brother Will came from Somerset 56 years ago to buy a business. They went to Bungalow Town and fell under its spell.
I remember it was a lovely day, and both my brother and I were more than impressed with the railway carriages, brightly painted, with pretty chintz curtains, forming part of the various types of shelly bungalows.
And what about the people who lived there? Were they pleasant sort of people?
Oh, they were delightfully carefree people. There was something strangely attractive about Shoreham Beach.
What sort of people lived there? Sporting people? Theatrical people I know quite a lot.
There was a cross-section of almost every trade and profession. We had Hackensmith.
Well, he was the wrestler, wasn't he?
He was. Mm-hmm. Then there was Bombardier Billy Wells, the boxer. There was Sir Malcolm Campbell.
Where did he live?
He lived at Tipperary.
Well, that was the one with the big tennis court, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. And many of the times, I've helped push him round that tennis court to get his Bugatti going when he was a regular racing driver at Brooklands.
And the jockeys used to come there as well, I believe.
Yes, all the jockeys spent the Sussex fortnight at various bungalows. And I remember Johnny Dines telling us that he thought he had quite a chance on Eagle's Pride when it won the Cesarewitch.
Oh, he certainly had.
We had specialists from Harley Street and Wimble Street. They found Shoreham Beach quite relaxing. And so did many celebrities from the stage profession.
Well, I'm afraid you must blame my aunt for that. Because I think it was in 1905 that the Hippodrome was opened. And naturally, people she knew used to come there. And she'd invite them over, you see, for the day and have lunch and that. And they were so charmed with the beach that they started to have bungalows built. And this is how the bungalow town started to be a theatrical community.
Your aunt also had later on this very big bungalow, Pavlova.
Yes, after there was a road built. That was a very big bungalow. In fact, it was a show place, as theatre people in those days used to have their homes. Well, I think they still do, as show places.
Someone once said it was Pavlova, the dancer, lived there, but was this true?
No, this never was true. My cousin Sissy was doing an imitation of Pavlova, who was then playing at the Palace Theatre in London. She was a very big success. And my aunt went to see her, Auntie Mari went to see her, and was so charmed by her, and she'd just bought Pavlova, and so she christened it Pavlova. The dining room had got, I think it was 24 oak chairs. You know that black oak, all carved and that? And the long table, and she used to bring her silver down with her, you see, her table silver and that, and there it was laid out with candelabras up and a big silver rose bowl with artificial geraniums in it and red carpets and absolutely lovely. And every room she had was a different colour. And there were an awful lot of bedrooms in that Pavlova bungalow. Mm.
Didn't you have a story once of the sea breaking in there?
My goodness, yes. We came down one March and we found that all the kitchen windows were broken. It was an enormous kitchen with windows right along. And the sea had come right through. And underneath the lino were all pebbles. And my cousin said, oh, we must have a fire here. And of course, there were the stoves in the middle of the room with the pipe going through. And she tried to light it. And of course, everything was damp and she couldn't. And she thought she'd put some paraffin on it. And, of course, there was a spark there. She put this paraffin on, and it just exploded, and she dropped the can. And in the dresser on the other side, a very long dresser, after we'd got the fire out, we opened the cupboard doors, and the flames were all still on the water that was in there, the seawater that was in there. The oil was floating on top alive. And a light, so we had that all to get out then.
What a fright for you all.
It was an awful fright that I was about 11 or 12 at the time.
I remember Mari Loftus very well indeed. She owned a bungalow called Pavlova. It was a very luxurious bungalow, and I'm only sad to think that it got demolished to make way for what later became Shoreham Lido. Subsequently, the Shoreham Lido disappeared. In other words, the council took away all the bathing chalets that occupied the site, and the county council took over the beach, and it became developed with non-residential property.
One of the oldest stage families is that of the Lupinos. Some of them lived in Old Fort Road. Others were Sam Mayo, Arthur Conquest, Connie Emerald, and so many more. And there was Billy Williams.
They called him the man in the velvet suit.
One of his songs was When Father Papered the Parlour.
That's right, yes. You couldn't see him for paint.
The bungalow that Billy Williams himself lived in, he named Kangaroo. I think he must have had very strong associations with Australia, because another one he built, which was within about three or four doors of a Kangaroo, he named Emu.
Near them, the Lupinos lived.
Will Evans and his family had a most delightful bungalow on the seafront in Old Port Road, which they named Hop O' My Thumb. Also built a string of bungalows on the opposite side of the road, which had the most romantic names. One of his bungalows was called the Baroness, and next to that, another one was called Puss in Boots. Next to that was Sleeping Beauty, then came Pompous, Tollemache, the Swallow, and Cormani. So you see, certain of those were taken from shows, Puss in Boots and the Sleeping Beauty. It sounds quite delightful to my mind. But some of those bungalows are still there, they're still standing despite their age.
Will Evans was more of an eccentric comedian, I think.
Well, he was a sketch comedian. He had sketches, other people on with him, you know.
But your uncle also did sketches, didn't he?
Yes. They were called Brown, Newland and LeClaire. And they did a sketch called Black Justice. And they corked their faces up and wore white wigs. And it was a courtroom scene, a comedy courtroom scene.
Did you know Gladys Cooper when she lived at the Croft?
No, I didn't know her. You see, when I was 13, I went on the stage as a single act in Variety. So, of course, then there was a gap where I didn't come to Shoreham so much.
Among the other theatrical people there, I seem to remember the Melville brothers. There was Walter and Frederick Melville,
who
I believe had the Lyceum Theatre in London, and Andrew.
You're quite right, yes.
Didn't Andrew have the Grand Theatre in Brighton?
He did, yes. Now, Andrew's widow still lives in the Shoreham area. I do remember the Melville family very well indeed, because I had good reason to, because their bungalow, which was named Villa Lido, was immediately opposite their own, where I used to live myself, in Minnehaha.
Didn't you tell me once about some of the Melvilles, Walter and Frederick Melville, meeting your late husband, Monsieur Eddie Gray, and having a little chat on the beach?
Yes, Eddie and I were having a walk up the road, and we met Frederick Melville, and they were talking, and Frederick said, "Where are you going for Panto, Eddie?" So Eddie said, "Oh, I'm going to the Lyceum," because they owned the Lyceum at the time. He said, "Do you mean that?" So Eddie said, "Yes." He said, "Right, that's it." And there was never a contract, but Eddie was there for several years. But they never held a contract. They were wonderful people. But it was lovely in the evenings, because as a little girl, Auntie would walk down the path to the road when she was at Pavlova. And theatre people would come up, you know, that she knew. And it would turn into a party that evening, you see. She'd invite them in. And I must have been a terrible bore, because she would have me sing and dance, you see. And she kept on and on and on. And when I was so tired I could hardly stand up, I used to be sent to bed, so I used to keep going.
Ernie Main was another well-known variety
artist.
Yes,
he was there. Yeah. The woman that used to sing Just Like the Ivy.
That wasn't Florrie Ford,
no.
Was it?
No. Flo was there, of course. Flo Ford was there. Marie Kendall. She was there. Oh, there were so many.
Hetty King once said she had a bungalow called the Bungalow, but I can't remember just where that was.
Well, at the time, I suppose she was married to Ernie Lottinger. I do remember one called the Bungalow, but I can't remember where it was.
Ernie Main and a bungalow called Simplicity, which was immediately next door to his friend Albert Lefree's Coogee.
Eric and Renee Lefree, who were the two youngest, went on tour playing the Fred and Adele Astaire parts in Lady Be Good.
Maurie Kendall, you know, was 91 when she died in 1964. Now, the beach has childhood memories for Jim Walters.
Well, I seem to remember going to a school called Mrs. Barker's School there. And
Where was that?
That was in Beach Road, not very far from Ferry Road. Then, of course, later on when we started taking more interest as in the church as choir boys, not that we could sing, but they couldn't get any other boys to join in. And sometimes in the summertime, when Mr. Engelbeck was the priest in charge, we used to have services on the beach, and we would travel in procession from the Church of the Good Shepherd down onto the sands and try and sing against the noise of the sea.
Of course, Mr. Engelbeck was quite a character, wasn't he?
Oh, he was. He was very well known for some of his absent-minded acts. He didn't often go to meet his family if they'd been out shopping, but one day he did decide he ought to go and meet them to tell them that something had happened right outside their bungalow, that the guest men had come and dug a pit, and if they weren't careful, they might fall into it. And when he'd met them at the bus, he walked home with them, having forgotten to warn them that there was a big hole in the shingle just by their gate entrance. I think he slipped in himself, if I remember rightly.
You must remember the old fort.
Oh, the old fort was a great playground where all the boys and the girls who would play boys' games were allowed to join in. And we would often spend the whole day playing games up on the fort. And then on to the silver sands, which were nearby.
It was more complete then, surely.
Oh, yes, I think all the rooms were in use, or could be used then. It was full of rubble in places, but there was a proper moat all the way around the fort, and there were one or two of the guns, if I remember rightly, which we used to sit upon, I think, and make out we were firing them. But why we sat on them to try and fire them, I can't remember.
There were no Coast Guard lookout at the fort then, was there?
Oh, there was a Coast Guard hut there. I think it was made out of part of an old railway carriage. But it was nearer to the harbour jetty than the existing Coast Guard station.
Wasn't there a Breeches Boys station? Where was that?
In Ferry Row they had a rocket station. There was a rocket house there with a cart in it. And it was supposed to be a horse-drawn rocket cart. But as there were no horses on the beach, I don't know how long it took them to get a horse from the other side of the river to come and tow the rocket cart down onto the beach to fire it. But I can't remember it going off. I mean, I do remember when we were living there, a tramp steamer coming ashore in our garden. We were living in a bungalow called Fides. And we woke up one morning to see a very large boat right ashore at the end of our garden. Well, that was a shingle garden.
That was the Hampshire coast, wasn't it?
That was the Hampshire coast. And I remember Captain Cannell was the master.
And what happened to it?
Well, it was there for weeks, if not months, and they unloaded most of the cargo and carted it away. And eventually, I think they refloated it, possibly after its back had been broken.
What about the fishermen? There were quite a lot of fishermen there.
Oh, there were. They used to fish from the beach with their boats. They were all rowboats then. And there used to be a family of fishermen called the Lakers, I remember. And they used to stand on the top of the ridge of the beach, and they would suddenly shout out, "There's a shoal," and you'd see the mackerel, and they'd leave one rope on the shore and take their net right out behind their boat, letting it out, and bring in the other end of the rope. And then everybody who was in the neighbourhood would help pull. And sometimes we boys used to get behind the net when it was getting near to the shore, because the mackerel started jumping out over the back of the net. And we'd hold our jerseys out, and sometimes a mackerel might jump into it. We could take that home for breakfast.
Do you remember the beach green?
The beach green was now roughly where the shops and a block of flats are and a garage at the entrance to King's Drive. And there we used to have fairs visit once or twice a year, and occasionally a circus would come.
And didn't they have beach sports there too?
Oh yes, there was a beach sport. I never quite remember who organised them, but we used to have a lot of fun with those. And then of course, in connection with the church, they managed to buy an old army hut which was up on the downs at Happy Valley, and with various people's help they carted it down onto the beach and they re-erected it, and it became the village hall for the beach, known as the church hall, where we used to hold shilling hops, and there was even a small dance band which consisted of Mrs. Engelbeck and myself, and sometimes they might get a violinist who would help. Of course, then later on, they started having some clubs on the beach. There was, for a long time, there'd been Billy Williams Club, and then there was the Sports Club and the River Club, and at one time, they had a paddle steamer anchored in the river.
In the early 20s, most of the bungalows were let to holidaymakers. But then with the electrification of the Shoreham line from Shoreham to London, then it became more of a permanent home for many commuters.
And of course there was a bungalow halt, wasn't there, on New Salt's farm?
That was before electrification.
Ronnie Munro and his dance band in a 1926 recording, typical of the time, the heyday of the beach. Well, came the war, and after Dunkirk, the army gave 48 hours notice before destroying all but a few of the bungalows. The beach was prohibited, except to the army and observer corps. Chief observer was Fred Batten, who, after some prompting, spoke of an experience.
Oh, yes, we had high seas for 2 or 3 days, and it left a mine uncovered just in front of the post. We, on duty, we informed the bomb disposal unit, and they were coming as soon as possible to deal with it. But the tide was rapidly coming in, and I didn't want to lose sight of it, so I went down to the beach and caught hold of it very carefully and lifted it, and having lifted it, I felt quite safe, and I took it through the bungalow across the Old Fort Road and gradually edged it under the barbed wire, which enclosed another minefield. The bomb disposal people came later on and exploded it, and said that it was in a dangerous condition, and it was only prevented from going off by a small piece of shingle. But I did handle it very carefully.
And so, as a war casualty, Bungalow Town ended. Our thanks to Patty Loftus-Gray, Fred Batten, Ivor Jim Walters, and Reg Leckett, who've recalled its past. It has never been the same since the war.
It's just like a suburb now. I mean, it isn't a bungalow town anymore.
Of course, when you hear the words bungalow town, a lot of people think of it as a lot of shacks. But it wasn't, was it?
Oh, no, there were some beautiful bungalows there. Beautiful.
It was really far more delightful in those days than a lot of people consider it to be today.
How it's all changed.
Oh, how it's changed.